From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. I love a good miracle story. You know that already, don't you? Those people who tune into this show. And there's a great new film that's out. It's called Believe. And it's a film from Spirit Juice Studios. And we'll be joined today by Rob Kazmark from Spirit Juice Studios and Jennifer Bauer, the mother whose child miraculously survived and thrived as a result of a miracle. We'll be talking about that film, Believe, in just a little bit. And later in the program, we're going to be talking about a new episode of a program that I produce. It's called Hidden Gems, Catholic Shrines in America, the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche. On the feast day of Our Lady of La Leche, October 11th, we've got the new episode hosted by Nell Angievsky, Director of Catholic Church Tours. We're going to be exploring St. Augustine's National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche, the oldest Marian shrine in the United States and location of the first Mass celebrated on U.S. soil. And we'll be so excited today to talk with Bishop Eric Pollmeyer from the Diocese of St. Augustine in just a little bit. And check out my series, They Might Be Saints. Relatedly, the episode on the Martyrs of La Florida airs on October 14th. In the battle for souls in pre-colonial Florida, the bloody persecution suffered by Spanish priests and Catholic Appalachian men, women, and children is a forgotten story that must finally be told. That is, They Might Be Saints, the Martyrs of La Florida. And check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. One of my favorite saints, my favorite miracle-working saint, Padre Pio. We go to San Giovanni Rotondo, where we look at Padre Pio, the great miracle-working saint. He's my subject in this journey to Italy to meet the man known worldwide for healing miracles by location and exhibiting the wounds of Christ in the stigmata. And that's Saturday, October 18th at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the might-be saint of the day. For today, we've got Blessed James Grissinger, who lived from 1407 to 1491 in Bologna in Italy. In the 365 Days with Mary project looks at Our Lady of La Leche from St. Augustine in Florida in the 16th century. And the question of the week, what did the church say about the reported apparitions in Lubbock, Texas in the year 1988? And the miracle of the day happened on October 11th, 1529 in Gubel, Switzerland, a miracle of war. We'll tell you about that in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week. We report on miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And maybe this isn't one of these miracle stories like a Marian apparition or a Eucharistic miracle, but it's kind of remarkable anyway. Brazil, the country with all the giant statues of Jesus and saints and Mary, there's a new statue, a record-breaking statue of Mary in Brazil. And so, of course, Brazil is already famous for its soaring religious monuments, famously Cristo Redentor in Rio de Janeiro. I was there just a year or two ago. The latest work of sacred art signals something more than a race for the biggest. It reflects a deep-rooted desire to make faith visible, to inscribe belief into the very landscape. And so this new statue, it was constructed from prefabricated sections assembled on site, will be housed within the Shrine of Our Lady of Fatima in Crato, and the sanctuary itself includes a replica of the Chapel of the Apparitions in Portugal, connecting Brazilian devotion to the global Marian story. And for the local community there, it's got great significance. The 72nd anniversary of the visit of the original statue of Our Lady of Fatima to Crato, an event that left an imprint on the city, and the name is throughout the city as well. And so this statue is 51 meters tall, and of course we speak in feet in the United States, but those are big numbers. And what does 51 meters really look like? Imagine a 15-story apartment block or the height of a European cathedral spire, and the Cristo Redentor statue is already impressive at 30 meters, but this one is 51 meters. And so this one, and the other Cristo Protector in Encantado, it is 43 and a half meters. So this is way up there. The Statue of Liberty is 46 meters. So this is bigger than all of those And so this is one of the largest statues in the world and the largest statue of Mary in the entire world. And so that's today's Miracle News. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that writes in the fastest with the correct answers. And you can send your answers to questions@miraclehunter.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page of miraclehunter.com. Last week, we talked about St. Therese, and we remarked that her canonization was one of the fastest in history. And so I asked the question, has there ever been a French saint canonized faster than St. Therese? And I looked and I looked for an answer to that question. I didn't know that answer either. It was a hard question. Sorry to make it so hard for you. But so Therese, she died on September 30th, 1897, was canonized on May 17th, 1925 by Pope Pius XI. That was 28 years. And so the only French saint I could find with a shorter run from death to canonization was Saint Bernard of Clairvaux, who died in 1153 and was canonized in 1174, which is about 21 years later. And so that is the only answer I could find for a French saint canonized faster than Saint Therese. In this week's question, we're talking about the canonically crowned image of Our Lady of La Leche in St. Augustine. It's the subject of the new Hidden Gems episode, which airs on EWTN. And so my question is, name any of the other three canonically crowned images in the United States. And if you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and we'll see if you have the right answer. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about a brand new film from Spiritu Studios called Believe. And we'll be talking to the recipient of the miracle herself. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love hearing great miracle stories. People email me all the time about miracles happening all around the world. And I love when I stumble upon them myself. Well, it's not really my own miracle story that I stumbled upon, but I got an email from Rob Kazmark from Spiritu Studios related to a miracle story that they've documented in a brand new film called Believe. And you can access that film through Spiritus, and I'll tell you more later how to watch that film. But it's an incredible miracle story about a baby that was born against all odds and survived with an incredible story. We're so excited today to be joined by Rob Kazmark, the producer of that film. He's from Spiritu Studios, and also Jennifer Bauer, the mother of the miracle baby. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so excited to talk to you about this. I've watched this film myself, and it's truly a moving short film, and I think that people who have a heart of any sort will enjoy this film, but people who love miracle stories, as I do, will really be energized by this one. Tell us, Jennifer, about this film. Tell us the backstory here. What were you going through in your life at the time? Talk to us about your husband and your other children and the new baby that was on the way.
Sure. We were living a very blessed life with six children, and God blessed us with Mary Elizabeth. So we went in for a routine ultrasound at the typical time. We don't get any special testing because it doesn't, you know, wouldn't change our hearts. So during the routine ultrasound, things look a little bit different. And of course, after the ultrasound, the doctor came in and said there was a lot of concerns, and so much so that we had to go to a specialty hospital in Indianapolis, Indiana, almost every other week for care because they weren't sure if she'd even be able to survive the birth. So during that summer, prior to her birth, we took a spontaneous road trip our pilgrimage, you might say, to Our Lady of Champion in Wisconsin. And we had all the kids with us. We went to confession. We went down to the grotto, lit candles, and really just kind of left everything, you know, just all of our prayers and requests. And just it was a really, really healing journey for our family to go there. So that kind of was towards the end of the pregnancy. And then fast forward to the pregnancy, they were starting to say, well, the heart is actually looking, you know, it still had problems, but they were like, I think you can deliver closer to home to be closer to your family. And that in and of itself, you know, was a small miracle to us. So by the grace of God, we delivered locally at a high level NICU. And many doctors had told us, you know, she's going to need heart surgery right away. And that was not the case. We got to bring her home for a short time. So we were so incredibly grateful to be able to have some time with Mary Elizabeth before she would need that inevitable heart surgery. So she graced our lives for 6.5 months. And the kids, obviously, the moment they met her, they all fell in love with her. Parishioners at our local parish fell in love with Mary, and she would trail along with me to adoration on Thursday night, that little flower. And it was just, we all bonded significantly with her in that short little time. And so when it came, you know, for heart surgery, everyone, you know, had a hard time letting go. So, because
and
we
if
knew
we had
it was
to sort
really
of recap
rough.
The, her heart condition, she had holes in her heart. Was that
yes.
the issue?
Yes. She had a multitude of holes in her heart. So we definitely knew it was going to be a significant, long surgery. So, it was roughly 7.5 to 8 hours long. And so the surgeon, said, you know, I have a lot of concerns. There were still concerns. He tried to fix what he could. But that not everything, you know, was done. And that's typical when there's multiple concerns with baby's heart. So, I know part of the story is there, but I can just share briefly that when we had, when she was crashing after post-op time, before she was placed on life support, we had family praying around the globe. Literally, we had Sister Judith was going to Sister Catherine of Casper and asking for her intercession. As the head nun in Germany, I had students at Lourdes praying. We were praying the rosary every night over her crib, even in her critical states. And so when it came time that we knew we might lose her, it was around midnight, 12:30, and we were really praying for a miracle. And they were, you know, lowering the bed, getting ready to do everything they needed to do for CPR, and this angelic surgeon, I call him, showed up out of nowhere, literally out of nowhere. And the only way I can describe him is golden, just kind of bright like a light. And he just said, you know, so calm. He said, I need to place Mary Elizabeth on life support. Do I have your permission? And Kevin and I were like, absolutely, you know, go. And he left. And there was a young woman with him. I couldn't even remember what she looked like at this point. And we signed documents for her, and Kevin and I sat in our little waiting room and just prayed. And we never saw him again. I believe it was a head nurse that came out and said, Mary Elizabeth's on life support, and she is currently stable. And that was incredible. It was incredible. To this day, no one can tell me different. I know that was either her guardian angel or another angel looking out for her and for getting her on that life support to give her the strength that she needed. And then just, you know, the rest of the story just beautifully unfolds during Holy Week 2022. So on Palm Sunday, they tried to wean her off of life support and it didn't work. But as the week went by, I think it was around Wednesday or like Thursday, they were able to turn off the life support, and they kept everything in though, just in case. And it was like, Good Friday by the Lord's Passion. She, came off, they were able to remove. And that's when I had my vision. My husband had another lovely vision in the small chapel of Riley Hospital.
Yeah, tell us about that. I remember that from the film. There was such a dramatic moment that that Rob Kazmark, who's with us today, and Spirit Juice Studios put together. They kind of recapped a vision in which you understood that everything would be okay. Tell us about that experience.
Very beautiful. I just saw the Blessed Mother and Jesus coming towards Mary's crib from above, and it was a sense of peace, and they were both just bright, so very bright and so beautiful. And Jesus just placed his hand over Mary's heart, and the surgeon's hand was there too. And that, to me, I knew in that moment that he was going to heal her. He did take Mary Elizabeth and rock her and soothe her, and she was very much drawn to him. Her eyes were completely fixed on him. And for a small part of time, I thought, oh no, like she's going with him. And I just remember my heart hurt, but when he placed her back in that crib and had his hand over her heart, I knew he was giving her back. I knew that she was going to come home with us. And the road most certainly was not easy after that, but the trust that I had and that Kevin had after that was just so, so surreal. And I do think that he just needed us to realize that I'm in control. You know, I've got this, and I will, you know, I'll do things in my way, in my time. Right. So it was just a gift to us of just trusting in his will. And I think that's the biggest lesson that Kevin and I have been able to really carry forward, is that we can't control things as much as we want to. We can pray for them and we can do the right thing, but we have to trust in his will and in his plan for our lives.
Now, that's absolutely beautiful. The story that we're learning today about that's recounted in the film Believe from Spirit Juice Studios. And reflect on the story. How is your daughter today? This happened a couple of years ago. You went through that incredible experience, and she came home to you after the surgery. How has she recovered, and how is her life today?
She is amazing. I always say she runs on grace. She still has a significant heart valve leak, and we haven't needed any more surgery, and we are very grateful to God for that. But she lights up our life. Our whole St. Monica's Catholic Church knows her. She's a little girl who, when she sees her brother serving, she will try and run up on the altar with them. I can't even explain. She's really, really, really changed so many lives in our community and beyond. So she's doing amazing.
Wonderful. Well, we've been joined today by Jennifer Bauer from the new film Believe, out from Spirit Juice Studios. And we're also joined today by Rob Kazmark, also who's behind this film at Spirit Juice Studios. Welcome to the program today, Rob.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's a privilege to be here.
It's great to have you both on today. And what an incredible story. Tell us a little bit about how this story came to you and your motivation to put this together.
You know, actually, I think probably a mutual friend of both of ours, Mark Balassa, he had come across the story, and we had been working with him on a few different projects, and said, you know, listen, there's this really interesting story. It's very moving. And, you know, could we jump on a call and you could hear about it, and, you know, maybe we can tell this through film. And so I remember, Jennifer, when you shared like the full version of it, right, which I think was probably like 45 minutes. I remember looking around the office here, and every one of us, self included, was just crying. It was so emotional because you really walked us through step by step. It was the full, you know, what, not the full story, but, you know, 45 minutes of it. And I was just so moved, and still am. You know, it's I think it's hard if you're a parent and you're watching this. It's like, it's hard to not get emotional. It was hard actually making it, to be honest, because of, like, you have to sort of separate yourself a little bit. Otherwise, it's so raw. And I could imagine, Jennifer, like, just telling this and going through the emotion that you have connected with it is you know, can be painful to keep bringing it up. But I think it's so powerful, and I think it's moving hearts out there right now.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the film, and I really loved the interplay between husband and wife going back and forth with their reflections about what this experience was like. And some of those scenes shot in the the waiting room or waiting area in the hospital. They were dramatic. You could really see the emotion that would have been happening that day. Talk a little bit about the process of filming a story that it had happened a few years ago, but also kind of making it appear as if it's coming to life in real time.
Yes, we had a really great director here, Cody, who did this one, and you know, his fingerprints on there a lot, and his approach is similar to, you know, a lot of these where we are telling a story and we don't have, like, it's not like we have, there's probably a couple actual photos from, you know, from the thing, but otherwise everything else is recreated. And so there's scenes that we shot with Jennifer and the Bowers and the family, and then, you know, the doctor, that's actually, you know, we didn't the budget for this, you know, it was minimal. So we made do, like, all the stuff that's in the actual, like, hospital is just in our studio. The doctor is one of our producers. you know, we brought some people in with, if you were to see sort of like the props of St. Michael, it looks pretty cheap in real life, but, you know, with different camera angles, the lighting, you know, lighting is one of the most important things in filmmaking. Getting the lighting just right. It's the same reason why if you drive home, you drive down the same path every day, but for, you know, when you drive during sunset, you're like, wow, this looks beautiful. Yeah. Nothing's changed except the light. And so understanding how to motivate and use the light to tell the story. And then, you know, on top of that, the lenses that we chose and the camera angles and all that stuff. So, you know, it was really important. It took us, and Jennifer knows, it took us a while to get this right. We actually had a version of it, and it wasn't quite right. And Mark, you know, he's like, it's just not, it doesn't have the supernatural part of it. We need to, and so we wanted to do this justice. This is such a powerful story, and when we didn't want to do it half-baked. And so sometimes it's worthwhile spreading it out and getting it. And so it was really interesting too, just some of the techniques, like the baby in the sort of in the womb, that was just like a small little like makeshift thing. And this, I could probably send some photos I have from my phone. You know, you can see it in real life. It looks kind of silly, but the way you capture it on the camera, it could, you know, really sell that and draw you into that whole storyline. So you're taking through, you know, each part of it, and it feels ideally as authentic as you can, you know, given what we have access to.
Absolutely. The name of the film is Believe, the Bower Miracle Story. Where can people see this short film, Rob?
You know, they could head over to our website, spiritjuice.org. It's right on the front page there. Also on our YouTube channel, Spirit Juice. If you go on YouTube and type in Spirit Juice, it's there. You know, it's free. It's just, we're trying to, you know, the people say, well, what's the goal of this? It's like, you know, Jennifer, when we had that initial call too, like there was that question that came up, and I want to speak for her, but from my understanding, and it's been my motivation, really my North Star in why trying to get this just right is, there's arguably nothing more tragic and hard to go through as a person, as a human being, to be a parent and have your child suffer, whether they're younger or older. And if you can create a source of hope for people or inspiration to help them get through that, I think that's, it's hard to find, you know, a more noble cause. So that's been my motivation to get this right.
Wonderful. Well, it's a well-done short film, and I encourage people out there who are interested in stories like these to check out Spirit Juice Studios to watch this short film. Well, we're so grateful to you, Jennifer Bower, for reflecting on your incredible story and lending it to the world to see and through the eyes of Rob Kaczmark and Spirit Juice Studios. Thank you both for joining us on today's program.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you, Michael.
God bless. That was Rob Kaczmark from Spirit Juice Studios and Jennifer Bower talking to us about the film called Believe, the Bower Miracle Story. Check that one out at Spirit Juice Studios on their social media or on their website. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And once in a while, I get an interesting email from somebody who's experienced something themselves. And in this case, I have a message for somebody who was present for the apparitions that were claimed in 1988 and 1989 in Lubbock, Texas. And so I'll be interested to read you that question and read you and tell you what I know. So, greetings, Miracle Hunter. Back in around the year 1989, Mary appeared in Lubbock, Texas. I believe the church had around 13,000 people showing up because the visionary stated that Mary would appear. This was the miracle of the sun, and some people did not see her or did see her. And according to the visionary, Mary would send rain before Mass to clear up the area, and that's indeed what happened. And I was there, and I did see the sun dancing around. I did not see Mary, however, and the person I was with saw her walking in the clouds. And after this trip, I returned to the church. I had a major conversion, as well as the person I was with. It was a glorious event. I'm curious whatever came of that time and event. I never hear any mention of it anymore. Do you know if it's approved or not? Thank you. Diane. Now, thanks, Diane, for your question, and it's a good one. Now, there are a number of cases like this throughout the United States and around the world where apparitions were claimed of Mary and the church has investigated and rendered a judgment, but we don't hear anything more about them today. So, just to recap what I know, these events took place at St. John Neumann Church in Lubbock, Texas. And in these messages, Mary was said to call people to prayer, repentance, and spiritual preparation. And some messages also included expectations of miracles that Mary would appear publicly on certain feast days. And on August 15th, 1988, on the Feast of the Assumption, there was this large outdoor mass that was organized at the church there. And there were something like 12,000 or up to 15,000 people who were there. And people claimed to see visual phenomena, things in the clouds, images of Mary, Jesus, the hand of God. Some people said that the sun seemed to dance, pulsate, change, sort of like a miracle of the sun. And rosaries reportedly changed color, or maybe from silver to gold and then back. Others smelled roses. The bishop at the time, Bishop Michael Sheehan of Lubbock, took notice, and he appointed a commission or a group of scholars, different experts in theology, psychology, etc., to investigate the claims. And the commission found that the people involved seemed sincere and that the spiritual devotion had increased. However, they did not affirm that the events were officially supernatural revelations, and the messages were regarded more as private devotions rather than mandatorily inspired by God. And so the bishop cautioned the faithful, encouraged balanced judgment, and asked the parish to slow down the public promotion of some of these claims. So that is what I know about those apparitions. And so this was not given a positive judgment by through the investigation of the local bishop there. And so this stands as sort of a memory for those people who, like yourself, were there for these events, whether there were miracles or otherwise there. We don't really know, but that is what the church has judged in this case. So thank you, Diane, for your great question. And I'd love to hear from people who have had similar experiences in Lubbock or other places around the United States where these large, Conyers, Georgia, for example, these places where there were large gatherings with a Marian visionary. I'd love to hear people's experiences. You can write in to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we talk about the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th, but believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion for each and every day that lines up to the calendar year. We're talking about feast days, major miracles, the building of basilicas, or other ways that Mary is honored in countries around the world. And so for today's date, you know this one already, but it's Our Lady of La Leche from St. Augustine in Florida in the 16th century. And, of course, we're talking with Bishop Eric Pohlmeier today about that and a new episode that's coming out on EWTN on October 11th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And the story goes that when the Spaniards founded the oldest city in the United States, St. Augustine in Florida in 1565, they brought with them a Madrid statue of Nuestra Señora de la Leche, Our Lady of the Milk, in the style of the Virgo Lactans, the breastfeeding virgin. In 1765, the statue was lost to sea, along with other religious articles, when England took Spanish Florida as its own colony. And when the Spaniards returned in 1783, the devotion to Our Lady under this title flourished. In 1938, a second copy of the original statue in Spain was created in its place, and many miracles have been reported, especially from couples struggling with infertility. who seek out Our Lady's assistance and later are blessed with children. And the statue was canonically crowned in the year 2021. And that's today's 365 Days with Mary, Marian devotion of the day, Our Lady of La Leche. Let's check out the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about a miracle happening on some date in Christian history. And so for today's date, October 11th, in the year 1529 in Gubel in Switzerland, during the religious wars of Switzerland on the night of October 11th, Mary appeared to the Catholic soldiers on Mount Gubel and renewed their vigor. Inspired by this apparition, they all used the battle cry, "Mary, Mother of God." They were victorious despite being heavily outnumbered. In memory of these two apparitions of the victorious battle, a chapel was erected on Mount Gubel, which was consecrated in 1559, and the sanctuary was cared for by hermits until the year 1647, when it was taken over by the Capuchins, who had found it in nearby convent. So that's today's miracle of the day from October 11, 1529, and we try to report on a different miracle happening on each day of the calendar year. And let's take a look at the sainthood news. We do this every week where we talk about saints on the path, or people on the path of sainthood, and who's coming down the pipeline. And there's a big canonization coming up on October 19th. And perhaps the biggest known, multiple people are being canonized on the same day. But the biggest name is Bartolo Longo. And he was an Italian lawyer who, after years of involvement in occultism and spiritualism, converted back to Catholicism and became a lay Dominican. And he devoted his life to promoting the Rosary, founding the Shrine of Our Lady of the Rosary in Pompeii, and serving the poor throughout various charitable works. And this canonization mass is happening on October 19th at 10:30 a.m. local time there in Rome. Of course, Pope Leo XIV will preside over the celebration and the rite of canonization. And in addition to Bartolo Longo, there's a handful of others who are being canonized. Ignatius Chakarala Mayolan, an Armenian Catholic archbishop and martyr. Peter Torat, a lay catechist from Papua New Guinea, who was martyred. Vincenza Maria Poloni, the founder of the Sisters of Mercy of Verona. Maria Troncati, she was a religious sister. Mary Help of Christians missionary. Jose Gregorio Hernandez Cisneros, he was a lay physician and doctor of the poor from Venezuela. And, of course, Bartolo Longo rounds out that list. So, big canonization coming up on October 19th, and that is the sainthood news for today. And we talk about those people on the path to sainthood, and we talk about my project, They Might Be Saints. So we talk about the Might Be Saint of the Day, the person on the path to sainthood whose death anniversary or feast day lines up exactly to the day's date. So for today's day, we've got Blessed James Grissinger, who lived from 1407 to 1491 in Bologna. And his memorial is today, October 11th. He was born in Swabia, modern Germany, in 1407, and he was a mercenary for the army of Naples in 1432, and he was disillusioned with this military life, and he spent 5 years as a secretary to a lawyer in Capua in Italy, and he fell on financial ruin, and he briefly rejoined the army, then left for his own true vocation, becoming a Dominican lay brother in Bologna in 1441. He spent most of the next 50 years working in stained glass and painting images on the windows of churches, and he died on October 11, 1491 in Bologna of natural causes. And he was beatified in 1825 by Pope Leo XII. With a second miracle, Blessed James Grissinger will be known as St. James. And that's today's Might Be Saint of the Day. And for people who want to know more about They Might Be Saints, you can pick up my book, which is available at ewtnrc.com. I think it's my best one. Or you can tune into the television series, which airs every week on EWTN. And this week, They Might Be Saints features the martyrs of La Florida. In the battle for souls in pre-colonial Florida, the bloody persecution suffered by Spanish priests and Catholic Appalachian men, women, and children is a forgotten story that must finally be told. That is on October 14th. On Tuesday, that is the next episode of They Might Be Saints. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Bishop Eric Pollmeyer from the Diocese of St. Augustine about the brand new episode of Hidden Gems, about the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I've been talking on this program for a few weeks now about a new series that's coming out on EWTN. It's called Hidden Gems, Catholic Shrines in America. And it's a brand new series that I'm producing that looks at Catholic shrines around the United States and sort of their backstories of how they came to be. And this program is hosted by Nell Andrzejewski, Director of Catholic Church Tours, and it airs on EWTN. And the new episode that's coming out, premiering on October 11th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, covers the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche in St. Augustine in Florida. We're so excited today to be joined by the Bishop of the Diocese of St. Augustine, and that's Bishop Eric Pohlmeier. Welcome to the program today, Bishop.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be able to talk about Our Lady of La Leche today.
Wonderful. And I think that the Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche is an important shrine. It's the oldest Marian shrine in the United States. And it's said that it's the site of the very first Mass ever celebrated on the place that would become the United States. Talk a little bit about this amazing history of the location itself.
Okay. Well, I'm very happy. I have to clarify a little bit. So it is the first parish in the United States, but it's certainly possible that Mass was celebrated before developing the settlement of St. Augustine. So I'm not sure we can claim the first ever Mass. But our cathedral is the first parish of the United States, and it is in that area that was known as Mission Nombre de Dios. And not long after the Spanish settled there and began the missionary effort from that mission through what is now the United States, they brought from Spain the devotion to Mary under the title of Our Lady of La Leche. And so she has been honored in that place, and since that time has drawn people particularly interested in the welcoming of new children, people with difficult pregnancies, those trying to conceive, and over the centuries, the devotion around Our Lady's motherhood and the prayer for mothers of every age to welcome new children, that has drawn pilgrims from all over.
Wonderful. And let's talk about sort of those beginning days, those early days. What do we know about how the shrine came to be and the statue itself? Where is it from?
Well, so the statue that currently is there is part of a progression of statues, and so there is some history that's done about the image, but it's been various depictions. The common theme has been the nursing mother, and so the image of Our Lady of La Leche. So it was the devotion to Our Lady of La Leche that developed over time. And then as popularity grew in recent years, the bishop before me, Bishop Felipe Estevez, he had a desire to make it into a national shrine and to get a more formal recognition. And so petitioned for recognition from Rome and received the designation of a papal coronation. And so in 2021, the image that is there now was crowned by the Pope's representative, the Cardinal from Madrid, who came to celebrate with all of the pilgrims taking part in that day. And so there was a consecration of the Diocese of Mary, a coronation of that statue, and a formalization of it as a national shrine. And that was just a few years ago. And in my time here, I've had various encounters with people seeking the intercession of our Blessed Mother. Even in the last Jubilee year that we've been celebrating, we had a gathering of families for the Jubilee of Families, and just happened to run into a couple who had come all the way from California because they were trying to conceive their first child and were seeking the intercession of Our Lady of La Leche. And so it highlighted for me this great desire of many hearts and people willing to travel and benefit from the prayers of now centuries of people who have gathered here.
We're talking today with Bishop Eric Pohlmeier from the Diocese of St. Augustine in Florida about the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche, which is featured in the new EWTN program, Hidden Gems, Catholic Shrines in America, airing on October 11th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And Bishop, you did mention this sort of tradition or this attraction of the shrine for those people who are trying to conceive children
and maybe experiencing difficulty of one sort or another who come to the shrine. And there's a great great tradition of success, you might say, with many children coming as a result of this devotion to Our Lady of La Leche. Talk about what that means to the shrine there, and to the attendance at the shrine and the people coming to the shrine to have this sort of connection to children.
Yes, I would say that in the current times, that's definitely the primary identity that that area has. We call it the Sacred Acre because of the combination of the history of the first settlers and the visitors to Our Lady of La Leche. And so I have run into many people pushing strollers around the grounds and introduce me to their La Leche baby, as they say. And so we see those fruits anecdotally, and we're working to capture more and more formally the stories of those who not only desired a child, but those who were told by their doctors that the difficulties that they would have in conceiving, and even some who had just reached a point where they thought that it would be impossible to conceive, only to benefit from the intercession of Our Lady and now welcome those children, that they connect very much to her. So we have many stories. The people who are volunteers and present in the shrine frequently, they can tell you many encounters that they have. And we have, as part of the devotion, candles, and people will often write intercessions on their candles, and we have prayer books for intentions, and so we can see many more of those cases of people who both come praying specifically for that intention, but then those also who come back in gratitude for the graces they have received as they now welcome a new child into God's kingdom through Our Lady of La Leche's intercession.
Wonderful. And of course, people will come to see the statue and with those intentions, but the shrine offers much more than this, of course. And in this program, Hidden Gems, Catholic Shrines in America, we feature the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche, and we sort of demonstrate what people will experience or see when they come to the shrine. From your experience of having visited, what are the highlights of the shrine for a pilgrim who were to come and travel there?
Yes, I think it surprises people, the beauty of the place and really the depth of spirituality, because it was the first parish in the United States. When I speak about it, preach at masses there, I often will talk about this as the place that God chose to first make his presence a part of this new world. I kind of liken it to the scriptures, the Old Testament, when God filled the temple with his presence. So it was the choice of our Lord to come to these shores and bring the presence of the Eucharist with him. And because those first settlers were Spanish, the celebration of the sacraments was immediately part of their stepping onto the land. And the anniversary of that first landing was September the 8th. And so each year on the Saturday before or after that, we recreate those events. So we have people dressed up in the period costumes. They come in on the boat, they claim the land for God and King, and then the priest who was sent ahead early at that time, he walks up to the captain with a cross, they kiss the cross, and immediately proceed to celebrate Mass. So we recreate those events today. Each year, as they come in on the boat, they claim the land, they kiss the cross, and then we celebrate a Mass at what we call the rustic altar. So that's the outdoor altar that's nearest to the spot where they landed. So that's the really central feature that started everything. And then just next to that is the small historic church where the crowned statue of Our Lady of La Leche is. And then we have a larger chapel with a replica and a place better suited to groups that come here. The most visible part of the whole place is the very tall, great cross that was constructed at the time of the 450th anniversary of that landing. So now it's a prominent feature in the city of St. Augustine, visible from angles around the city. And in the lawn that is next to that cross, we have outdoor stations of the cross. A more recent addition next to that is a rosary garden that has an oversized rosary that someone can hold on to as they make their way around the path. So we have these devotional practices. And then throughout the year, we have different events where we celebrate Las Posadas as a part of the Hispanic tradition at Christmas time. We have a group that does a live Stations of the Cross next to the Great Cross as part of our Lenten devotions, and on Good Friday in particular. And then during the Jubilee year, we've had a series of gatherings that track the Vatican's celebration of Jubilee events. And so we've had people come together as families, as healthcare workers, as volunteers, as artists, and we'll continue through the remainder of the Jubilee year. So we have a vibrant culture of pilgrims coming to the place. And because St. Augustine is a tourist city, many of the tourists, they simply see the cross and they see the grounds and they wander in. And so it provides an opportunity for evangelization for the curious who are walking into this sacred acre. And so we have volunteers, and in the summertime we have seminarians that work in evangelization so that they can assist the pilgrims who come seeking the intercession of Our Lady, but also the tourists who come wandering in and find themselves blessed to be part of the sacred acre. And then we have masses celebrated each day and confessions available at a regular times. And so the whole life of sacraments and devotion that truly mark it as a holy place of great significance in history, of Mary's presence here, and of the vibrant faith that's passing this legacy on into the new generations.
Very well put. We've been talking today with Bishop Eric Pollmeyer from the Diocese of St. Augustine in Florida, and he is one of the interview subjects that we have in the new documentary program, Hidden Gems, Catholic Shrines in America, which focuses on the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche. We interview the bishop, the rector, the various volunteers who helped there, and also archaeologists. And I thought that was fascinating as well, to present the story of the archaeology that's been done on site to show that how far back it dates, and to find out what they have there at that site. It's truly a beautiful location, and we hope that the film does it some justice, showing off the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche. And people can go to the website, missionandshrine.org, to find out more about Mission Nombre de Dios, or National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche, as it's known, to find out more about this incredible place. And as we wrap up the interview today, Bishop, what is your hope for people who hear your interview and the interviews of the others and see the beautiful drone footage and on-site filming and photography and the host walking around the shrine? What is your hope for anybody who experiences this through EWTN?
Well, we have a long history in our church of pilgrimages, even calling the Christian life itself the pilgrim journey toward heaven. And the notion of a pilgrimage is that we come into a sacred place and we have an encounter with the Lord that we recognize because He has chosen this place for a holy purpose, that many people discover new riches in their faith, maybe a conversion of heart, an awakening to the life of faith. And so we're working to develop that experience as pilgrims come, as tourists wander in, that every person may hear the voice of God in a particular way, that maybe the sacred acre could be a place where their hearts and minds are more attuned, that ultimately the great miracle is the conversion of souls. And because of the long history of faith from this place, we know that many have embraced the faith, many have taken up the Christian life as converts, and many, even in the history, were willing to lay down their lives as the Florida martyrs are part of the legacy of the mission chain that began at Mission Nombre de Dios as well. So there are many different aspects of the Christian life that people can encounter, and like places of pilgrimages and shrines around the world, the hope is that presence of the Lord that many feel beyond what is their normal experience, their hearts may respond to the call of our Blessed Mother to be more willing, like she said, to do whatever He tells us to live our lives according to His will.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Bishop Eric Pollmeyer from the Diocese of St. Augustine in Florida, for talking to us today about that incredible shrine, the Mission Nombre de Dios, the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche, and also the brand new episode coming out on EWTN, which airs on Saturday, October 11th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you so much, Bishop, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you. Appreciate the invitation.
God bless. That was Bishop Eric Pollmeyer giving great reflections on that beautiful shrine, the oldest Marian shrine in the United States. If you haven't been there already, you might consider checking it out. And if not, check out the episode on EWTN, which airs on Saturday, October 11th, on the feast day of Our Lady of La Leche at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can also see a replay if you go to the on-demand site of EWTN, and you could find that at shrines.tv to watch that episode. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio and check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guests today talking about the new film Believe. We talked with Rob Kazmark and Jennifer Bauer. And also Bishop Eric Pollmeyer from the Diocese of St. Augustine joined to talk about that new program on EWTN, Hidden Gems, Catholic Shrines in America. And check out that program at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time on October 11th, the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche, where you can explore St. Augustine's National Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche, the oldest Marian shrine in the United States and the location of the first Mass celebrated on U.S. soil. I'd like to thank you for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.